This is the day that the Lord has made. We're certainly rejoicing already, and we're glad in it as we have another opportunity for fellowship, fun, and some spiritual food as we digest this menu today in a new unit called Obedience in Societies, out of the book of Exodus. And our first lesson for this unit is obedience in justice. Obedience and justice. We want you to continue to lift those that are in need, whatever the need may be, comfort, provision, or whatever. Please lift them in prayer. Certainly those that are traveling to participate in homegoing celebrations of dear ones, we certainly extend our graces and our sincere prayers as they travel. Out of the book of Exodus, God has given what we know as the Ten Commandments in chapter 20. And actually, these verses here in chapter 23 are an extension, further clarification of the ninth commandment there in verse 20. The authors have entitled our lesson, Obedience in Justice. And it's the law. And I know some of you say you live by grace, so you can ignore the law. That is not true. Don't ever get it. Well, without the law, grace is meaningless. Without the law, grace is meaningless. Laws that promote justice, God was very concerned about how we act and react with one another. He's concerned about that. And he has laid down, commanded those things, those doctrines, those teachings that enable us to have a civil society. Now, all you have to do is look around over decades now. We used to say days and these times, Brother Davis, but we're moving now into that. This seems to be the paradigm. This seems to be the model that men and women, boys and girls, don't know how to treat one another. Can you imagine God giving us a brain and ears and hearts? And with all that sophisticated equipment, Brother Bogan, we can't do a simple thing like do unto others as we would have them do unto us. And it's really interesting. It's really interesting because I'm finding that, you know, normally you had to go over to the sin side of town in order to, Brother, Sister Vanessa, you'd have to go to the Sinville in order to find this maltreatment and this inability to treat one another with justice and fairness, Brother Fred. But now, you know, it's everywhere. I mean, it's permeated all of society. And as a matter of fact, in some Christian circles, I mean, Christians are a lot meaner than so-called out-and-out sinners, Sister Lovelace. Oh yeah, if you want to be treated unfairly, you associate yourself in the Christian community and you're subject to do it. And God knew all of that was going to happen. It happened. But you have to ask yourself every now and then, you have to just say, why? Why is it like this? It's called sin. That's all you can call it. All this civil upheaval and discourse and action that here in America that we're experiencing, Sister Gwen, it is sick. Absolutely sick. People can't even talk to one another. And all of a sudden, because if they do, they become enemies because they have different views. And you know, it used to be that people could debate and discuss, Sister Hollis, and then go have coffee and fellowship, go out to the bar. But now, no mas. They don't do that no more, Sister Vanessa. You got a different view than me, it's grounds for me to disagree with you, and not only disagree with you, but for you to become my enemy. And if you're my enemy, surely I don't have to treat you right. But I beg to differ with you. And that's what our lesson is about here today. Okay. Well, we had 47 years of marital bliss from Michael Johnson. And it was my intention for him to serenade the anniversaries. But since he did, Mike, do you have your book? Do you have your Sunday school book with you? Michael Johnson? He stepped away.
Yes, sir, I do.
You do? All right. Well, great. You're going to be my reader today. You know, as we celebrate you and your wife, you know, we want to highlight that 47 years. 47 years is long. Mike, I've only had to speak, put up with you for about 31 years. But I can imagine, sis, at 47, you know, it's pretty tough. It's pretty tough. But today, would you read for us our first segment about legal matters, being impartial? And God lays it out for us in those first three verses there as how we are to promote justice. And that if you do not promote justice, you're in direct disobedience to God's command.
Exodus
20. Mike,
Verse 1, thou shalt not raise a false report. Put not thine hand with the wicked to be unrighteous witness.
In other words, Deacon Newsom would say, you shall not circulate a false report. You should not participate in first report. But I guarantee you, Brother MacArthur, the Louisiana Cajun, would say, you shouldn't lie on folk. You shouldn't just conspire, you know, and participate in circulating false reports. And you know, they all start out so innocent. In most cases, we don't even recognize it, even when we go in the courtroom. You know, it starts with a little old fib, and it blooms into a lie. And before we know it, we are putting our hands to wicked testimony. And that makes us a wicked witness. If you hear specifically, God was addressing the issue of legal matters, Mike. He was saying that if you go to court, you tell the truth to the best of your ability, so help you God. That's why they make you take an oath, because they assume, it is assumed in especially in America's system of justice, that if you swear by the name of God, that you'll at least tell the truth. But we have folk that go to trial as a witness. We have folk that are witnesses in various congressional hearings and court hearings that actually get up there and tell a bald-faced lie, knowing that they're lying. That's in direct contrast to what God has commanded you to do. He says you're to make a good report. You're to make a true report. No matter what the crowd is saying, no matter what your church is saying, no matter what your political affiliation is saying, no matter what your fraternity or sorority is saying, if they're telling a lie, they're telling a lie. And that is wrong. And late Sister Kendall used to say, a lie is a lie if everybody agree with it. And the truth is the truth if nobody agrees with it. God says, do not bear false witness. That's one of the commandments. And that do not bear false witness, he's saying that includes your courtroom. That includes your congressional committee hearings. That includes any system of administration of justice where justice is being sought. Don't bear false witness. Because when you do, you pervert justice. Verse 2.
Thou shalt not follow a multitude to do evil, neither shalt thou speak in a cause to decline after many to wrest judgment.
Just because everybody else is getting on the stand, just because your political party is getting on the stand, just because your church is getting, just because your small group, just because your Sunday school class is getting on the bandwagon of falsehood, don't you do it. And it doesn't matter that more people are for the lie than against it. And so that you're not, don't feel uncomfortable going against the crowd, you get up there and participate in the lie. But then, Sister Pillow, here's the thing that gets me. Those people who really know it's a lie and participating in the lie, they feel bad, but they never say anything because I'm really not a liar. I'm just going along with the crowd here. No, that which you condone, you believe. That which you condone, you are. And God says, don't do it. He has commanded us specifically. He says, there will always, because God knew that there will always be a strife wherever there's a lie. Wherever there's falsehood, there would be strife. And he says, amongst my people, I'll just tell you not to do it. Don't participate in bad witnessing, false witness. And don't be ready to receive a false report either. You know how some folk just say, what happened? You know, there's some things you should just know that are as false. And here's how those people, Sister Ogletree, that bring you a false report. You know what you should say when you see them coming. They lie so much, friend, that you say, "Oh, you know what? I was doing fine before you came and told me that lie." Starts off as a little gossip, and you know how we like gossip. And that's why it's so hard to pick juries, Sister Lovelace, is because people done got together and listened to the news and heard the falsehoods, and now they can't testify accurately in court because they believe the lie more than the truth. Somebody comes, tells you anything, and if you didn't witness it, you can't say, I heard. They don't allow hearsay testimony in the church. I mean, in the court or in the church even, because even scripture is clear. If there's an accusation, it must be brought with at least two witnesses that actually know the facts and the details. Don't issue a false report. Verse 3, Brother Mike.
Neither shalt thou countenance a poor man in his cause.
Now we're getting down to the nitty gritty. Because, Brother Monty, some justice, the only justice you find is just us. if you poll, Sister Barnes, it appears that your justice is a little bit different than the justice of the rich man. If you're poor and not able to hire a bunch of lawyers, you're gonna give your tax returns over. You know, you ain't going to be able to withhold your tax return. Fred won't get your taxes. But if you're poor, before the sun go down, those taxes better be on the IRS desk. God says, I'm no respecter of person, James Bogan. Why should you get justice? Why should you expect justice and then not give Sister Barnes justice? Why should Sister Iris Hollis, who's connected socially and in the community and with all the religious organizations, get justice? But Sister Lovelace doesn't get justice. God says that's wrong. And we in America subscribe to the falsehood that justice is blind. And that no matter who gets on the scale, the right accounting for their size is computed. Nobody's tipping the scale, putting their thumbs on the scale. But God says there will come a time when the poor man has filed a lawsuit against a powerful man who owes him money, who did not pay him, has not paid him in years and years and years, and that poor man will have to say, oh, well, count it up as a loss. God says that's not justice. It's amazing that people who break windows in downtown Hollywood shops get 3 to 5 years for breaking that window. And the people at the Capitol, thousands of them, haven't even been taken to court. Not a political statement. This is a God statement. That's wrong. The poor man deserves justice, whether he has a lawyer or not. And you know what? You know what's really interesting? Just think about poor man going to court, Sister Lovelace. He has to have a court-appointed attorney. And normally those attorneys are folk who are just beginning to practice law, or that's all they've ever done. You know, they don't have a lot of resources. They're not given a lot of resources to defend the poor. So, you know, when they start talking about conducting all these tests to find out if your DNA and all that is in there, the court appointed lawyer didn't have that kind of resource. But a thug, that's what I call him, a thug that can murder his wife and for years and years and years escape justice simply because he's got a lot of money, that is wrong. God says it's wrong. T.G. Smith didn't say it was wrong. God says it's wrong. So God says, in the legal system, there should be impartiality. That's all those first three verses are saying. Let's look at something else. Brother Mike, read verses 4 and 5 for me.
If thou meet thine enemy's ox or his ass going astray, thou shalt surely bring it back to him. If thou see the ass of him that hateth thee lying under his burden and wouldest forbear to help him, thou shalt surely help with him.
Well, your enemy. See, we were talking about poor folk. And see, you know, I can easily identify with that, Fred, because I'm not like Fred. You know, I'm so broke, I can't even pay attention. So I can identify with the poor, Monty. You know, it really resonates with me. But what about folk that you don't like? See, because at first glance, one might think, class, that the enemy is the enemy. But no, it's just somebody who's opposing you, who has a different view. See, and right now, what our society has done, Brother Montgomery, is that if you disagree, that therefore, look at, oh, he's expressing some kind of a view. You don't know what my views are. If you want to know what my views are, my real views are, tune in to Family Church School on a regular basis and not just one Sunday. But even people who are politically different than you, they're not your enemy. So you're not going to help them. If they're in a dire situation, you know, we don't relate too much to this agrarian context, but we certainly every day we work with folk who, for whatever reason, they have fallen in disfavor with you, or maybe not so much with you, but maybe they consider you an enemy. Just because you disagree. And I mean, personally, it hit home. I'll share this. My daughter and husband have had friends from college. Tough. I mean, thick as thieves. They go to each other's house, and they don't, that when they visit each other in the city, they don't worry about getting hotels. They come ready, roll. They sleep in their beds on the floor, wherever they can find a place. It don't matter. I mean, all these years. But the political climate has so poisoned all of us that they're no longer friends. Mm. Was that your wedding? Participated in your wedding. Watch your babies being born. And you're not friends. They're not your enemies because they disagree. And here, God is commanding that you will. He's asking the question just here. He's saying, what if you meet that person that you disagree with, that you no longer like, that you think is the enemy? Would you not give them help? Would you not treat that person with kindness? Can we not just be kind no matter what? How can you call yourself Christian when God so loved the world that he gave his life for you and you embrace that, but you're not willing to give up your political views or your social or your cultural views in order to accept that person? Oh, it's a condemnation on all of us. Because here he says, you shall surely, if you see that man's livestock loose, you see that woman's livestock loose, if you see that person's child in the street, we've gotten so callous that we can see children in danger and walk on by because, they're Democrat, they're Republican, they're Catholic, they're Jewish. Just because they have a different view of life, just because they have a different perspective. And yes, even they may have intentions of harming you. God didn't allow us, he says enemy here. But we know that just from the context of the passage, so we're talking about in the legal system itself. Does your enemy not deserve justice? And you know what? It was really just this week, Deacon Newsom, there was a court case involving a gentleman who had come out with some expressions supporting a former president, a very strong, and because of that, and some dealings that he had, some accusations, some false reports were made. And I'll say that they were false reports because I believe them to be that then. And it's subsequently this week it buried out that the person was not convicted. They were found innocent, as a matter of fact. But it would have been very easy for that person, knowing that the type of political views he had, for the justice system made up of ordinary folk could have said, no, I ain't like him, I don't like who he associate with, so he's guilty. God says, even your enemies need to be treated the way that you would like to be treated. And if your livestock got out, if you lost your wallet, your expectation would be that somebody would retrieve that wallet and return it to you. That's justice. And if my wallet is lost, please return mine. Because the $3 that's in there, that's always in there, I need it. I need it every day. Verse six.
Thou shalt not rest the judgment of thy poor in his cause.
In other words, again, he's back to saying, you will not, under any circumstances, is that how you feel about somebody should not determine the rightful behavior toward that person. They don't need that. I just don't feel that those people deserve justice. It's not about your feelings. They must be guilty. Oh no, you know what? They just beggars. You know they're suing because they did not get their stimulus check and they sued. Why didn't I get my stimulus check? Oh, they want a handout. They trying to cheat. Oh, surely their votes don't count because they're a bunch of cheaters. Let's let the majority of folk go to the polls unobstructed, not afraid. But in certain communities and in certain ballot boxes, let's put armed guards to intimidate folk. And look at the jurisdiction. Yes, I said it. You got to look at the boxes that they're looking at. We're so looking at the dime. We're so busy looking at the dime boxes the dime boxes of the poor that we're missing the dollar boxes of the rich. God says, don't do that. If a poor man has a legitimate case, you ought to hear it. And folks, the big shots, you know, Davies and Pillow and Ogletree, Hollis, you know, the big shots of the church. You know, when they have a complaint, oh, we fall all over ourselves trying to rectify. But when the old Bruce Sneed, him and Vanessa, and Barbara Hayes, Sister Taylor, Sister Gwen, when we come with our petition, oh, just dismiss them. And especially if that Sneed, you know, I mean, he's of that generation, you know. He's not postmodern enough. That is wrong. And if we're going to have, and what it does, guys, it breaks down civil discourse. You can't talk anymore when you think your voice is not being heard. And when you stop talking, you stop thinking. And when you stop thinking, you're subject to do anything. So now when people are out there raising Cain, we have a problem because their voices have been silenced by the injustice that is placed upon them each and every day. And we see it. We don't see the poor winning the majority. We see people with the dollars always seem to be winning. But don't delude yourself into thinking that's how the story ends. Because it is in direct contradiction to the word of God. And the least shall be the most, and the most shall be the least in the fullness of time. So Brother Johnson has read so eloquently, don't pervert judgment of your poor in a dispute. Let there be equal justice for everybody. I just said, Sister Kay said, wrong is wrong if everybody agrees with it. And just because we've permitted this to happen throughout society, continues progressively over and over, just a little bit. Treat them this way, and we play this yo-yo effect in the court system. We think that, you know, the poor have scored some great points in justice, and all of a sudden it's taken away by another ruling of an unjust judge. God says our people should not be that way. And especially it should not be that way in what we call the Christian community. We got judges. We've got public, we've got prosecutors. We got public defenders. We got lawyers. We got all those folk who run for office, who say that they are Christian, but yet they participate in an unjust system and they watch it day in and day out. They have let people serve countless years in prison. What kind of justice is this for a poor man who all he needed was a DNA test to declare his innocence, but he couldn't afford it? And what about a man who has served more than 25 years in prison for a crime that he didn't do, and the technology was available to exonerate him, but because he didn't have high price lawyers, he lingers. I mean, he lingers there still in prison. That's not right. God says, you may not be watching it, but I am. Because in my word, I specifically said, you will not do that. Verse 7, 7 and 8, Brother Johnson.
Keep thee far from a false matter, and the innocent and righteous slay thou not. For I will not justify the wicked, and thou shalt take no gift, for the gift blindeth the wise and perverteth the word of the righteous.
God says, stay away from mess. That's how Robert Newsom would say it. He would say, just stay away from mess. Anything that's false, stay away from, you know, matter of fact, he didn't say just stay a little bit far, run from, get far away from it. Do not kill the innocent and the righteous. That's what he said. Do not kill the innocent and the righteous. And with that, you know, we have laws about capital punishment and who gets it and who doesn't. But it's really amazing that two young men, both 21 years old, Fred, and they're in a nightclub and good friends, been friends since childhood. And they get to discussing a young lady who's caught their eye. And that discussion turns into a little scuffle. And during that scuffle, one kills the other, takes out a gun and kills him. And for that, in that case, that young man is tried, convicted, and sentenced to death by legal injection. But then we have a suburban 19-year-old that picks up an AR-15, shoots to death multiple children under the age of 18. Goes to court, and the jury just could not find in their hearts to convict him and sentence him to death. If one case doesn't deserve the death penalty, the other case doesn't. In my eyes, and I'm certain this is no, you can't go judge which way I'm going on capital punishment. I'm just saying that doesn't seem fair. That doesn't seem justice. How did the parents of all those kids that died feel that they got justice? No more so than the 21-year-old who in his right mind, who in a sober state, Monty, would have never killed his best friend. God says, do not kill the innocent and the righteous. And he says, I'll let you deal with that. Brother Mike, in verse 8, he says, don't take a bribe. That's all it says. He says, a bribe will blind folk to justice. And see, there have been many cases in America where rich mobsters have gotten to the jury and bribed them, and they were found innocent, not guilty. God says, that's wrong. But you know what? I think we can see something else here, Brother Davies. Don't let your friendship, don't let your association with someone else, don't let the friendship of one bribe you from administering justice. If the guilty are guilty, they're guilty, whether they're your friends or not. I mean, we hear resurrection. No, I mean, at the very heart, early in our years, we had a situation, we've had a couple of situations where folk were very dear to this ministry. But if we sat on the juries that they were on, we would have to say guilty. We couldn't let the bribe of that friendship, that association, that a community with us. Oh, folk, we live this. And we're living it more and more every day, where we see that justice is something to just be thrown to the side. God says, you shall make no bribe, for a bribe blinds the discerning and it perverts the words of the righteous. A person can be telling the truth, I was not there. But if you've taken a bribe, you're going to participate in the lie. Verse 9, verse 9, as we go, because they're ready to go now. Sister Pillar, they ready to go. Sister Bond, I sure wish you were here to provide security because, you know, I know when I walk out, you know, somebody ain't going to like this. You know, you believe this. You must be a blank, fill in the blank. Yeah, you must be this. You must be, hey, let me tell you what I am. I'm T.G. Sneed, bloodbought, sinner, like all of us, saved by grace. And I want to be treated like everybody else. And I'm compelled to treat others like I want to be treated. That's all this lesson is all about. Brother Johnson, take us out.
Also, thou shalt not oppress a stranger, for you know the heart of a stranger, seeing ye were strangers in the land of Egypt.
Sister Bonds, Brother Davies, Brother MacArthur, please stand by the door. They won't like this. And if all of you agree with it, they certainly won't like it in the rebroadcast or whatever format that they have, Sister Ogletree, now for the family church school lesson. Because this is the heart of the matter. He says, don't treat one another bad. Don't be impartial. People that you know, people that you love, don't treat enemies impartially. You know, don't participate in perverting justice for the poor. And he says, but also the stranger. Folk who don't look like you and I. Folk who don't speak the same language as I, but they reside in this country. Or they're trying to get into this country. It's almost appalling to me, and I will express this political view, that all of us, with the exception of a few, I would say all of us, you know, by birth or whatever, we came from somewhere else. We came from somewhere else, and we don't want no more to come from somewhere else. And if they come from somewhere else, we don't have to treat them the same. We don't have to give them the dignity and the justice that they deserve. Yes, I said it, Sister Pillar. I said it. It's out. You know why? Because it's biblical. God told us it was going to be a day like this. Do y'all remember Genesis chapter 50? You remember how well Israel was doing, Fred? In Egypt? Bogan, do you remember? They had it going on under Joseph. But guess what? Joseph died. And Exodus opens up and says, and there is Israel. And there is Egypt. And Egypt now grows up and did not know Joseph. And the multitude of the Jews greatly increased. The strangers in Egypt greatly increased. And someone in the cabinet of Pharaoh, you know what they said, Davies? We got to stop this. Been treating them fine. They're prospering. But all of a sudden, we can't let no more in. And we ain't going to let the ones that are here out. Folks, that's exactly what we're doing now. All these immigration laws and anti-immigration laws are all about. God says, if they're here, and just because they don't speak the language that you speak, they deserve justice. Don't take them to the court, and because they don't understand your language, deport them without a hearing of understanding. And just because they've been allowed to stay here, don't put in economic and social issues. Don't implement economic and social issues that keep them down, that keep them from justice, that won't allow them to have the proper hearings, that keep them on the hook for years and years and years without hearing a hearing and then complaining that they're here, that they're here. Give them a just hearing. And if they found that they're not acceptable, that they don't meet the criteria, send them back. But don't let them languish and then you complain. Okay, let's go to church. Let's have communion. But let's think about it. Do we treat everybody the way we want to be treated? When we cry out for justice, do we really want justice, or we just want justice for us? That's my time. Thanks for yours. See you guys in church. Have a blessed day.